and welcome to the first show of our spin-off podcast as we take a closer look at the power of football and the value football puts back into Scotland. For regular listeners of the podcast, you'll notice I'm not joined by Chris Sampson today. Making his first start as host after two guest appearances is Scottish FA Club Services Manager Danny Bisland. Danny, what can those listening expect and who do we have on first?
Yeah, firstly, thanks very much, Michael, for letting me step into Chris's big shoes. And the second thing is that I'm really fortunate we've reached out to somebody who I know, Stephen Sweeney from Aberdeen FC Community Trust, and we've invited them onto the show today just simply because I think over the past 6 weeks, they're one of the clubs who have been most prominent in terms of social media and have managed to draw quite a lot of attention just basically for the outstanding work that they've done in this short period of time. And I think, crucially, from my point of view, I'm aware of the work that Stephen and the Community Trust have done over the last number of years, and that they've actually been awarded from UEFA recently, and they've won numerous other awards from the ECA and from the Scottish FA. So they are one of the high-performing community trusts and one of the best in Europe. So I'm absolutely delighted that Stephen is here today.
Good stuff. I suppose then, Stephen, welcome to the podcast. Do you want to just give us a bit of an intro about yourself and your role?
Sure. Thanks very much for having us on, Michael. Look forward to the chat with yourself and Danny. I'm the Chief Operating Officer at Aberdeen FC Community Trust. Moved up to Aberdeen 7 years ago. You probably tell by the accent, I'm not originally from Aberdeen. Moved up to Aberdeen 7 years ago, personally and professionally. The best thing I've ever done, absolutely love it. Since moved up here, married, kids, all the rest of it, they're all little Aberdonians. Before that, I was at St Mirren Football Club, alongside that, a PE teacher as well. And I guess, my time at St Mirren, it was just like the best apprenticeship you could have ever have wished for. Made every mistake I could have made, and, been in every situation you could have been in, but been lucky that I was surrounded by lots of great people that have gone on to do lots of really good things as well. And then from the teaching point of view, really enjoyed that, but probably just wanted to explore how I could combine the love of helping people with football. So sort of found myself up in Aberdeen and supporting to run the kind of great work that we're doing as a partner charity of a football club.
And I think, Stephen, as well, that we've obviously linked in the past in a number of projects, and you've linked in with the guys from the North region as well. How big can you just give a bit of an overview of what the foundation what does it look like in terms of an operating procedure, and how many people have you got based up there?
So the Community Trust, we have 28 full-time members of staff. We've got a board of 8 trustees as well, and pretty wide range in the work that we do. I guess within any community trust or football based charity, you've probably got two elements. You've got your sports development side, and you've got your sport for change side. So, we've got all our football for life stuff, where we've got a team of, six or seven staff that look at, from a football point of view, increasing participation, supporting grassroots clubs, running, developing local leagues, educating coaches, all that sort of stuff. But then on the using football for social change, and it being broader than the balls, the bibs and the markers, a lot of education, a lot of health and well-being to close the attainment gap and support some of the most kind of challenging young people. A lot of work around young people who are really disengaged with education and are maybe in danger of maybe being sent away to an out-authority placement on care for whatever, and you're trying to kind of turn the trajectory of how their life's going. A lot of wider public health work as well. We're active ageing and dementia. Friendly wellbeing activities, they're really close to our heart, very kind of emotive subject for a lot of people. So really, really wide ranging types of programmes. Sometimes when we self-reflect, we feel that we're probably a bit too broad and need to challenge ourselves to be a bit more focused. But when you identify so much need in your community, the best thing, you just want to help so many people.
And so I think, Stephen, again, one of the reasons we wanted you on today was to talk primarily about the Still Standing Free campaign. It would be good just to hear from your point of view, what are the aims of this with the campaign? Where did it originate from, and just what is the motivation behind it?
It was getting clearer and clearer as time was going on that, a week or two away from when we went into actually into lockdown, that you could see that coming down the road. And Dave Cormack's, of course, the chairman of the football club, and I think everybody's been impressed with his leadership in the short time that he's been in there now as the chairman. And his direction, you know, from club and trust as a strong partnership, was very clear that through this period, it's about us together showing solidarity and support with our community. And he was very, very crystal clear on that. And he sent us away to go identify what the needs in our community are and how we were going to respond to it effectively. So we accelerated a little bit of consultation with our community, you know, and the fans around the grounds in Scotland. The Pataudry's no different, sing around about he's one of your own or whatever, all these sort of songs. And that resonates as well with your community work, where you want to look after your own too. So, you know, through a lot of our education projects, we got speaking with schools around, you know, how are, you know, some of the families that face a lot of societal challenges, how are they going to shape up through this period? And it was, you know, very clear that food poverty was going to be quite a significant challenge, you know, with some families maybe finding it difficult to feed the kids with a lack of access to free school meals and a number of other things through that time. So we felt that some sort of food drive and delivery service was going to be needed to tackle food poverty. And the second thing that was probably identified loud and clear that our community is going to need is support round about mental wellbeing and tackle isolation. You know, there's lots of people in lots of different scenarios, and some people will be enjoying this time at home and never get it back, but there's lots of people that will be finding this really challenging on their mental health as well. And we were really aware of that, and we really seen our role was how can we just lift people a little bit. So we've embarked on, as part of the campaign over April and May, to check in with 12,000 people on the phone, whether that be supporters of the club or whether that be programme participants. I guess whilst there's been lots of other little spin-offs, those were the two sort of aims of the campaign, is that without putting a number on it, we're wanting to support as many of our own families as possible that we could throughout the region through food poverty and a food drive and delivery service. And we wanted to embark on this mass community call centre campaign from home and try and lift up 12,000 of our supporters through a wellbeing check-in phone call.
And if we just jump on back to the food drive, I mean, you've delivered food to something like over 3,500 people. How's that all come together?
Yeah, no, you're right. That's reached about 3,500 people so far. And in there, there's been about 2,000 of those identified vulnerable children. And about 800 now deliveries through those 6 weeks or so. And each one of those deliveries has been equipping a family, an average of size of a family of four, with enough food to feed them for a week until we're able to deliver to them again. So huge operation. And we partnered up with an organisation, Community Food Initiatives North East, too. We've done little bits of work before, and we've always had lots of shared outcomes, but I guess we've never worked as closely as what we probably should have in the past. And I guess this crisis is one of the positives, is that we've kind of pulled our resources and worked closer than ever. So through the kind of reach of the club and the channels that we have, we've shouted really loudly about their work and about their need for food donations to keep up supplies to be able to deliver to, you know, all the families that we're asking for, but also, you know, all the people that usually rely on food banks when food banks have had to be closed through the, you know, the different social distancing guidelines, etc., through the government. So, we recognised as well that CFIN probably needed a little bit of financial support to be able to meet our need as well. So we've been giving them £1,000 a week to contribute to the food deliveries on our side, and again through our channels and the, you know, really generous support of the Red Army and wider people out there in Aberdeen. We've raised over £28,000 so far through our Just Giving page for Still Standing Free campaign to pay for that food, and to pay for, you know, staff time and the vehicles, etc., to keep this going. Because, you know, this situation, even if the lockdown situation does start to ease over the coming weeks and months, this community need isn't going to disappear. So it's, you know, it's a great lesson for us and a takeaway from us that, you know, we're going to need to work with the CFIN more than ever to support these families through the other side of this as well.
Can I say as well, like, I know we've obviously got yourself on, Stephen, to talk about the AFCCT and everything that's going on up in Aberdeen. But, you know, I think I spoke to you, Michael, a couple of weeks ago with Chris, and I was highlighting all the best practice and all the incredible work that was taking place, you know, from from Connacht Juniors and Ayr United and Glenbourne Miners Welfare in the South West to clubs like Pollock and Celtic Foundation and through in Glasgow, you know, to, you know, Stenhouse Muir in the central area and Cumbernauld Colts. You know, I think all of them, and when we've spoken to them and when we've read everything that's going on in the press, you know, I think one of the big things, and Stephen, you touched upon it, was a new network of partners that's, you know, not you've been forced to work with, but just the very fact that you're the football club. I think the biggest thing that we've learned over the last 6 weeks is the real value for a lot of clubs is the connection. You know, like, people just want to be connected to the football club, and if they're able to do what you're doing, Stephen, I think, you know, that's incredible. You know, and even touching upon that, you know, the phone calls, you know, how have they been received? You know, when you've been reaching out to the fans and to vulnerable people within the community?
The feedback for both the food delivery campaign and for the calls, it's been amazing. And we're not reinventing the wheel. There's a lot of clubs doing, as you've touched on, a lot of clubs doing fantastic work as well, and, you know, very, very similar, folks from very similar areas. But I guess with the calling campaign, we've been set the bar by Dave Cormack. He likes to set the bar high, and we see how close we can get. He was wanting us to reach 12,000 people over the next, you know, over April and May. And as it stands, we've reached over 6,500, probably 7,000 by the end of the week. So we're on track to reach those 12,000 by the end of the month. Within all those calls, we identified around 300 people who, you know, whilst they appreciated that initial kind of lift phone call, they needed another follow up, and their circumstances dictated they required a little bit more support. So that's where we've had, you know, Dave Cormack himself, the manager Derek McInnes, Tony Docherty, some of the players, former players, following up with a second call to check in with people as well. And all of that combined, to say, has led to some really humbling feedback, to be honest. And some of the sort of key themes that have been coming out of that is around, you know, people wanting to give more and support our campaign or whatever it may be, and help local people in their community. You know, supporters clubs of AFC, you know, really going out their way and wanting to support people locally, particularly with actually people out with the North East. You know, our supporter liaison officer, Lynn Fish, she's just absolutely loved the response of supporters clubs in Edinburgh and Perth, where there's maybe an older person, you know, having to isolate, not get any family locally, and they can't get out of the shops to get food, and the next food delivery isn't for another few weeks, and, you know, we've got strangers supporting each other just through the kind of common cause of, you know, all having an invested interest in the football club. I guess the kind of overriding theme of these calls is just, it's unified the support. I think every football club, it's just the beauty of football. Everybody's got different opinions, haven't they, and views, and it's one of the things that makes our national game so magnificent. But, you know, that this campaign has unified the support at Aberdeen Football Club. Everybody's on the same page, I think, with that. People are obvious, you know, without putting words in people's mouths, people are openly saying that they're, you know, they're falling back in love with the club all over again. And look, the generosity from, you know, everybody, from supporters to local business to staff to volunteers to other partnership organisations, it's been unbelievable, to be honest, in the North East, because there's been a wee bit of a double hit. Where, you know, there's huge economic uncertainty, you know, globally with this pandemic, but with the double hit in Aberdeen and in the North East with the, you know, the downturn in the energy sector and oil again. So there's some families who they've taken a double hit, but they're still wanting to help, they're still wanting to contribute, and I guess what we're finding here is that the AFC and the Community Trust are becoming the focal point in the community and the kind of go to organisation to kind of direct help through. And I guess that from the football club's point of view, and from, you know, Dave Cormack and the board, one of the things they set out as soon as Dave was chairman was that they wanted to make sure that the club was at the heart of the community. And I guess we'd already made a really good start with the, you know, the prominence of the trust, but I think through this campaign, it's been the making of our partnership, to be honest. And it's brought the supporters closer to the club than ever before. But importantly, it's helped a lot of people. You know, that's the main premise, is we wanted to try and lift as many people as we can. And, you know, been really proud we've been able to connect with so many people and just try and do a little bit to help them through these times.
How does that partnership work between yourselves and the club, Stephen?
That partnership, we know we're the football club's partner charity, as we say, but and I guess we don't see ourselves as two separate organisations. We see ourselves as one. You know, of course, the football club will have its own ambitions and aims and objectives, but and the trust will be no different. But yeah, it's clear that we have shared objectives in there as well. And I think you learn the most about yourself through a time of crisis. And I think it's easy, you know, it'd be easy in this time, the organisations to go into survival mode and be selfish and look after themselves. But, you know, the football club and the trust, we've pulled our resources, looked at, you know, right now football's not happening, so that can go in the back burner. But right now, with all the resources we have, what can we do to help our community? Yeah, I think ultimately, like any partnership or how does anything work, it's all about people. You know, it's about leadership and people going above and beyond and people caring. So, you know, we've got strong leadership from the football club in terms of Dave, you know, saying that he's wanting AFC to be the heart of the community and it's one of their key pillars. You know, on the trust side as well, get great leadership from the chairman, Duncan Skinner, and the chief executive, Liz Bowie, as well, where we're very clear that we're wanting to become, you know, closer than ever with the club, and we're just wanting to help as many people as we can in our community and just help rebuild, you know, the other side of this, and support people as best we can.
One of the initiatives that we've called out on a previous Scottish Football Marketing podcast is the donation that the club's making back into the community trust around season tickets. Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, it's pretty incredible, to be honest with you. Yeah, Dave Cormack and the directors of the club agreed to a 10% matching donation initially through April, but it's now been extended to what we do through May as well. To support the community through this time. So, you know, not only through kind of direction the charities are going out over how the partnership with the club and trust are working, not only are we seeing that support the community, they're also financially contributing as well, which is key for any third sector organisation through this time. So, well, the generosity of Rossi is unbelievable, but it's been really clever the way the campaign's been pieced together, I think. And it's gave, you know, supporters an opportunity to have that extra bit of feel-good factor where they can support their club through a time where, you know, we don't know when exactly, you know, when is the season going to finish, is when's next season going to start, but, you know, the club's still going to provide value for that season ticket. But also at the same time, that matching donation, you know, gives supporters a comfort that they're actually contributing to, you know, the great work of the charity that's going on in the community as well. And, you know, on top of that, we also had the donation from the Arthur Blank Foundation, which is fantastic as well, where, as you know, the club have got a partnership with Atlanta United, which was kind of born through the investment from A&B Sports just towards the tail end of last year. It was predominantly initially around about the, you know, the football and commercial operations and looking forward to a new stadium. But it's, you know, it's been very clear through this crisis, again, even just listening to Darren Eales, who's the president of Atlanta United, and he's on the AFC board as well, just around how much the community and family feel of AFC is relevant to their partnership. And that's been reflected with, you know, Arthur Blank's foundation wanting to donate £25,000 across Atlantic to support what we're doing in the community. So, no, that's been really, really well received. And I guess what we've been asked to do from a trust point of view is set up that call centre where we've got 20 people working from home, which is incredible, because there's so many of these people, they've never done outbound calling before, and you're asking people to work in, you know, really challenging situations in their own home environment, whatever else they've got going on, but learn something new and throw themselves out there and get out their comfort zone. And, you know, that'll inspire me, to be honest. There's some employees from the club, from different departments, who, you know, are doing wellbeing calls, and then, you know, leading into, you know, if you're in a position and willing and able, you could support your club through, you know, the DNA membership scheme or season tickets. And then we've got a chunk of community trust staff in there as well, focusing solely on wellbeing calls and just checking in with supporters and you know, some of the more identified vulnerable groups, you know, the older people or whoever it may be. So, you know, that 10% match funding donation from the AFC directors, it's amazing. It's keeping us going, giving us, you know, a bit of resource at a time when, you know, cash flow is a challenge for all third sector organisations. And at the end of April, the target was to help us get to £125,000 through 5,000 season tickets. And we're just round about there. We're about 120,000 just now from around 4,800, tipping on to 5,000 now. And by the end of May, the aspiration is to see how close we can get to 200,000 with that donation. So, that support's so valued, so important. And just the getting back to the power of partnership at a time where, you know, charities need to be resourceful for us to be fortunate enough to have directors who can, you know, pull finances from other parts of the world and not just our own economy in the northeast of Scotland. It's a really important part of our financial makeup just now, and really, really well received.
Do you think that because of the work that you've done previously, you know, over the last few years, well, the last number of years up in the northeast, do you think that's allowed you then to have an even greater impact at the moment? You know, you've obviously, you know, created a lot of partnerships, and there's a lot of trust up there about what you guys do and deliver. Do you think that's helped you take this campaign to an extra level?
I think so. Yeah, Danny, I think that's a good point. And there's already a, you know, this campaign certainly creating a real feel-good factor amongst the supporters, and spoke about that already around, you know, if you're supporting your club, you're helping your community. But I think if we had been doing this from scratch, it certainly wouldn't have had as deep a ripple. You know, we're already, you know, well established. You know, the last 5-6 years, the charity's been growing and growing, and as you tipped on, you know, different pieces of recognition, you know, national and international over the last little while, which has, you know, certainly helped to raise our profile. And probably something that you know, work-wise over the last you know, up until probably the last couple of years, I was finding a real challenge was having those partnerships, you know, as embedded as what you'd like. But I think now that we have a proven track record, and people can see for themselves in terms of the outcomes you're achieving, particularly both local authorities. We've got, you know, Aberdeen City Council and Aberdeenshire Council. You know, we work across both of those geographical areas, if you like, the region. You know, both local authorities have their own local outcome improvement plans and things that they want to achieve. And I think when the chief executives and directors and councillors of local authorities see you actually help making an active contribution to, you know, making their local authority a better place and achieve what it's wanting to achieve, then I think it grabs attention. And I think particularly coming out the other side of this challenge, you know, local authorities are going to be in a position where we're going to have to think differently. You know, not as, you know, the local authorities are going to be facing, you know, funding gaps, and, you know, they're probably going through a period just now after the initial 6-7 month scramble we've all went through, and that they're having to, you know, consider service redesign and, you know, the other side of this, what does their offerings look like? And that presents, you know, an opportunity or a couple of paths. One, you can go back to doing what you've always been doing, or you can look to transform. It's an opportunity for transformation. It's an opportunity for innovation, not just with local authorities, but right across the piece, all the different partners you work with. And I think particularly from a local authority point of view, you know, the whole preventative spend agenda becomes more and more important, because when you're wanting to achieve more with less, then you need to be creative. You need to be working with different partners that can bring additional funding to the table, partners that can overachieve and demonstrate the impact that they're having. So yeah, you know, partnerships are critical. And I think over the piece, you know, having a solid, you know, 5 years of good work behind us and a track record, it's certainly help us accelerate the success of the campaign, no doubt about that.
And again, I don't know, just to get your views on it, you know, we obviously, in partnership, created the social return on investment piece from the UEFA Grow model. That launched a couple of years ago. And I suppose, again, taking it back from a national perspective, I think we've long advocated that football clubs are actually a really good investment in terms of time and resource for local partners and national partners, you know, because of their connection and because of what they're able to go and do. And again, do you think that approach has helped complement the stage of where you're at the moment, where you're able to go out and, you know, and have an influence from, you know, from a trust perspective into the main board and vice versa, you know, that you can demonstrate that you're actually a brilliant fit for, you know, and a really strong delivery model on behalf of the club?
No, you're bang on there, and probably you mentioned the social return on investment piece of research that was carried out, and the fact that Aberdeen was the first regional model. That was probably, if I'm honest, we're probably indebted to the Scottish FA for being involved in that and being the first regional example that took place in Europe, because that was probably kind of key piece of evidence and a key sort of trigger point where it piqued attention, of local authorities, health social care partnerships, other key partners that you're wanting to engage with, where, I think every football club right across Scotland and beyond have got great stories around what they're doing to develop the game, what they're doing to help their community, and all that anecdotal stuff is incredible. But it comes to a stage where, one of the things we recognised a few years back is that your evaluation needs to be strong. It needs to become a strength for you to be a sort of key player, and supporting the development of what's going on locally, socially, and with public health. So to have that social investment piece of research, and for us to be able to say to any partner, say, look, for every pound that you invest in our work, in football participation in the northeast of Scotland, that's going to be able to give you £10 a social, economic, and public health return. That's invaluable. It's been a really good shot in the arm for us as well in terms of our engagement with local business. We are probably, a few years back, we were really guilty of going somewhere, going for somebody, putting a wee pitch in, selling the dream, getting a little bit of money, going and delivering a project for 12 months and then getting back with a begging bowl and asking to do, to do the same again. Whereas we've certainly been through a journey and learned over the last few years that right from the start, we need to engage the partners and what we've, what have we learned and improved through having a go at the programmes that we've set out on based on their funding. And what return have they actually had? What difference have we made? Have we achieved what we said we were going to at the start? And, if you've invested £5,000, then, we can demonstrate that's actually had £50,000 of benefit to the northeast of Scotland. So, football is a great medium for local and national government to get the economy moving again, to improve society, to support the development of public health. And when we come out the other side of this, there's going to be lots of challenges around people being, really disengaged. People have, some people have took up running and cycling through this time, but in general there'll be a theme of people have been very inactive. Mental health will be a challenge, food poverty as we spoke about. So, all these challenges creates opportunity. Now isn't a time to step back. Now's a time to step up. And football, is very well placed through the football clubs themselves, through their community trusts and foundations and whatever, to step forward and say that we can be part of the solution in rebuilding, local and nationally our country again. And I think that's the offer we need to be putting forward to local and national government around, this being a period where the opportunity for transformation is there, and that football, we want to be at the table helping local authorities achieve what they want to achieve whenever they do, redesign their services.
You touched on a little bit about the future and how the period of inactiveness, and what is sort of future hold for you guys?
It's a good question, Michael. Thank you. I mean, I think now is a time for, reflection. Now, every organisation, every football club and their charity and whatever else will have had a strategy before COVID-19 and a plan, and there'll be some things in there that are still relevant and still exist, and the other side of this, you bring them out. Everybody have also had to flex and be agile and change direction and be flexible through this time. And I guess that's the organisations that be successful can continue to be agile and flexible and move quickly again. I guess it's important to just take a breath and identify what are the needs going to be in your community. And to recognise that there's a place for developing football, but also the whole social change through football. So I guess firstly on the sports development side, if you look at participation, I think participation levels are going to be a lot lower. People naturally, in general, are a wee bit more cautious about where they go and what they do. So that presents an opportunity, for football clubs to rebuild football participation. I think some of the feedback we're getting from grassroots clubs up here just now is that there's a concern around, retaining the number of volunteers. So that presents an opportunity for the football club ourselves to step up and help increase, you know, volunteering levels through the other side of this, and that will help clubs and leagues flourish again and get coaches educated and all that sort of thing. But certainly on the social, more social side, you know, going back to getting inactive people active is going to be key. As I say, the mental health provision, you know, mental well-being, it's important for us to take a breath and not turn off and do our own thing. I think it's important to take the time right now to be speaking to the local authorities, to be speaking to NHS, to be speaking to our health and social care colleagues when they have, you know, of course, when, you know, the people on the front line are, you know, these people are, you know, focusing on front line, and of course, but those that are able to start to have those post-COVID conversations, understanding what the community needs are, you know, where the resources going to come from, and how can we shape interventions that are going to help get people active again, going to help people return to whatever the new normal of life may be, and accepting that there's going to be huge challenges, particularly in education as well, where, you know, social distancing and whatever guidelines will remain in for as long as it's relevant to do so. And we'll completely follow those guidelines, but as and when schools do start to return, even with different social distancing, whatever guidelines within it, it's important for us to look at how we can support our local authorities and our schools and our universities in providing quality education where, you know, young people might not be attending school 5 days a week full time. They might be part time. They might only be attending certain days. So that's where online learning becomes absolutely critical. So we're probably just at a stage now where schools in particular are just starting to get comfortable with online learning, with using, you know, whatever video conferencing service that they use to deliver the direct delivery learning, or embrace different apps and technology. So again, there's an opportunity for football clubs to have a bespoke offer and to engage with schools and beyond these platforms, and working with some of the young people that we were working with before, or some of the new young people that are now facing different challenges in their life that they need support with. And more than ever, you know, literacy and numeracy, of course, is so important for young people, but the health and well-being for young people is an absolute platform and starting point for any form of education. So I see football clubs having a great opportunity and being really well positioned just to try and lift young people up, close the attainment gap, as we say, you know, move forward with nurturing approaches with young people, just to try and get them ready to learn again, and just to try and get them re-engaged, because that's some of the general feedback we're getting as well from young people that are being homeschooled. You know, like us all, we're all having highs and lows and peaks and troughs and hills and valleys at the minute with our mood and with our motivation. But I think, you know, in general, young people are struggling to maintain that level of engagement with online learning. So, you know, different offerings and things that can engage, and the hooks with the power of the badge or the power of football is going to help to get them back on board with what they're doing at school. And then that helps to build, you know, stronger partnerships for future when we can have direct delivery without social distancing.
Yeah, because it's interesting you're saying that as well, because one of the questions I was going to ask next, Stephen, was that round about, you know, this approach that you've now delivered with, you know, in partnership with AFC, you know, does that bring you closer to the fans and the players and the wider community? And likewise, does it do the same for AFC? Because, you know, I know Gavin Levy and Neil Simpson and the guys at the academy, for example, they got a lot of plaudits very early in the shutdown because of the online platforms and the social media campaign that they did round about player development. And I know that West Dyke up in the northeast as well have done something similar. You know, so do you think these all complement one another in terms of the different aspects of the club being able to then contribute to the wider, you know, just how all the different consumers that you've got up there, you know, fans, players, community, everybody else in between. What's your thoughts on that?
Yeah, well, I mean, look, football clubs are absolutely nothing without fans. Absolutely nothing without your community. Absolutely nothing without your members. So, you know, that's certainly going to be a real positive that's come out of this crisis for us, is that the club all different departments in the club, as you've touched on, and the charity, we would like to think, are closer than ever with our fans. And I guess from the probably from the club's point of view, I think from the club's point of view, this would hopefully be an ideal platform to go on a journey in terms of improving our fan engagement. I know that's something that's really big on with Dave Cormack, and you know, I think one of the big successes that we've had through the campaign and through the lockdown so far is the community call centre, is the outreach. And I think there's a strong case for that to continue beyond this, and just keeping in touch with people and speaking. And then when we are able to be face to face again, then those relationships can be ever closer. But look, ultimately, any organisation, you're only as good as your people. We're very lucky that, you know, lots of different departments, lots of great folk, from marketing comms to the youth academy and football ops people, as you said, all the different public facing sides of the club as well, from ticket office and support engagement teams and support a liaison and whatever else. There's a whole family in there. And Aberdeen have always been very proud of identifying ourselves as a family club. So we need to be really mindful of all our different stakeholders, you said, from the grassroots clubs that, we want to, support to keep engaging with their community as best we can through this time, to want to welcome people back to Pittodrie again when it's the right time to do so. Football clubs are absolutely nothing without their fans, without our members, without our community. So it's really important to, if there's been improved levels of engagement through this crisis, then to bring that to fore and to continue that the other side of this. Absolutely. No club's bigger, no club survives without their fans, and rightfully so.
Stephen, in your time at the AFC Community Trust, what would you say, and especially in more recent times, considering the circumstances, what would you say you've learned that you would pass on, like, to other clubs in terms of advice or things that you've seen work for you guys that you think, it'd be great if more clubs could do that?
I think the first thing is communicate. Drop your guard, drop the ego. No, we're all equal. You don't know what you don't know. I think networks and just speaking to people is just so important. And just taking the time. Life's busy and everybody's sprinting around a million miles an hour, but you just need to stop and connect with people. That's where great things happen. I think in general, sometimes clubs and charities are so close, and in other times they're a wee bit further apart. As I say, you learn a lot about yourself through times of crisis. So, what one of the things we've certainly learned here is that the football club and the charity are a real strong force for good when we're completely aligned and working closely in partnership. So we need to build on that and grow on that and let it flourish over the next little while. But I guess one of the great learnings is just because we're sitting in an office or virtual office at the minute and think up a great idea for our community and think it'll work. It doesn't mean it will. You need to take the time to understand your community and to speak with them. To understand what they need and to co-produce anything you do with your community alongside them. Don't plan activities to do things to people. You plan activities and programmes with people and design them with people to support them, shoulder to shoulder, side by side with them. And I guess, look, as football clubs mature into the whole sport for change side of things, just your evaluation is absolutely critical. To have the case studies and all the anecdotal stories is so important, but to be able to speak about, local and national government priorities and outcomes and objectives and show that you're making an active contribution to them is really, really important. And if you're working with broader partners, then to make sure that you involve them every step in the way in the process. Again, connect with them. If businesses are kind enough to financially support you, and no matter how big or small, then, take them in the journey every step of the way. Design with them, how you're going to spend the money, involve their staff in, volunteering in that activity, speak to them regularly about what you're achieving. Even if you make mistakes, it's okay to make mistakes. It's okay to learn and improve. It's just about connecting with people, communicating, and involving. There's nothing that can't move forward without a bit of quality communication. So it's just take the time to make the time for people and to speak. And with any connection, there's always a shared goal that you can come up with. So, you know, have time in your day to be creative, to be innovative, to think outside the box, and to be brave and be willing to try and do something different. And, you know, recognise that there's some organisations that can't move quickly. You know, they move slowly. So if you position yourself where you're able to be agile, flexible, you know, accelerate the pace, move really quickly, respond to community need, then you're an organisation that can be trusted. You're an organisation that people will call upon when they have a problem and they need something done.
There's some brilliant points within there, Stephen. I think your points round about connecting and listening and communicating, I think, are just so important. And I think not only you guys up in Aberdeen have done that brilliantly. I think there's been a whole host of clubs over the past 6 weeks that have done that magnificently and stepped up. So I just think this is probably a good time for us to say thanks very much for your time today. If anybody does want to reach out and get in contact with you or the club, what's the best way of doing that?
It's a Stephen with a V, Steven.Sweeney, Sweeney, @afccommunitytrust.org. And yeah, thanks very much for having me on. I appreciate that I ramble and talk nonsense sometimes. So I hope you can get some sense out of whatever I've put across today, and I hope that I hope that people enjoy it and can take something away from it.
I was just gonna say that's been a fascinating insight into the work that you and the club have been doing. I think it's been a great way to kick off this series of podcasts that's looking at the power of football. And I mean, if you want to see some of the other stuff that Aberdeen and the Community Trust have been doing, I mean, Stephen's not even mentioned half of what seems to be going on, whether it's collaborations with limited edition t-shirts and everything else. Is if you're on Twitter, is to give them a follow at AFCCT.
Yeah, and I think as well, just to echo that, you talking about the journey, Stephen, in terms of how long it's taken for the club to get to that stage and what you're doing at the moment, I know has taken a lot of hard work from a lot of different people over the years to get to this point. So I don't think that can be underestimated as well. And I do love the point you were making about just having good people in and around the club. And because of that, you're able to go and deliver all that incredible work across the community. So thanks again, and hopefully we'll get you back on to talk about the future once we've moved on from COVID. So thank you.
Thanks, Danny. Thanks, Michael. And yeah, you're as good or as bad as your people. So you get your recruitment right and it takes you a long way. But yeah, thanks for having us on. I appreciate it.